श्री गुरुभ्यो नमः ओम श्री गणेशाय नमः ओम ऐं सरस्वत्ये नमः
Sounds True presents Mantra, Sacred Words of Power, with author, spiritual teacher, and priest in the Vedic tradition for nearly 25 years, Thomas Ashley Ferrand. And now, Session 1, The Origins of Mantra.
We have a bias in modern spirituality that says that light is the highest signpost of spirituality and divinity, even. We have lots of evidence to support this conclusion. We have the light surrounding the Christ. We have the nimbus, the halo surrounding the saints. There is light that surrounds the priests who carry and work with the Ark of the Covenant in Judaism. We see the Buddha who has a halo. Many of us pray for light on the path, and we seek a goal which we call enlightenment. So we're pretty clear that light must be the beginning, the middle, and the end of our journey. But I suggest to you that that's not really the case, that sound is rather the beginning and the highest in terms of divinity, more than light. I know it's an outrageous statement. But let me present some evidence to support that. In the Bible, in the Old Testament again, God did various things before he created light. I suggest that if light was the highest spiritual quality, he would have created that first, but he didn't. In the New Testament Gospel of John, it states, "In the beginning was the Word." Now, light was not the beginning. Rather, it was sound in the form of divine speech. Neither in the Old Testament nor the New Testament do we find a verse such as, "And God made light to shine." Rather, God creates the phenomenon of light by speaking it. The primary mechanism of creation is sound. "And God said, let there be light." The Christian portion of the Bible was written a couple of thousand years ago in the Old Testament before that. But the Saptama Brahma from the Far East was written a couple of thousand years before even that, and maybe much older. I quote from Sir John Woodruff's Garland of Letters that has a translation of a portion of that scripture. "In the beginning was God with power through speech. God said, may I be many, may I be propagated, and by his will expressed through subtle speech, he united himself with that speech and became pregnant. Prajapati and Saraswati were then created." This statement sure sounds to me astonishingly like the Gospel of John. In other places in the Far East, in Chinese Buddhism, there is a figure called Kuan Yin. Now, she's referred to as the divine voice, which has called forth the elusive form of this universe. The Vedas, the world's oldest recorded scriptures, speak of the divine sound current, Shabda Brahma, which permeates and has created all. Modern teachers also speak of the power of spiritual sound. Sufi mystic master Hazrat Inayat Khan has written, "Divine sound is the cause of all manifestation. The knower of the mystery of sound knows the mystery of this whole universe." In the early part of the 20th century, there's a movement which I've called modern esotericism. It includes such people as H.P. Blavatsky, Alice Bailey, Rudolf Steiner, Helena Nicholas Rorick, and others. Here is a quote from The Secret Doctrine written by H.P. Blavatsky, who also founded the Theosophical Society. "Sound is such a tremendous occult power. It is such a stupendous force that the electricity generated by a million Niagaras could never counteract even the smallest potentiality when directed by proper knowledge." In the East, they describe the process of creation in these steps. First, we have God, whatever that is, as being. And then from being comes mind. And then from mind springs desire. And to bring desire to manifestation comes the will. And from the will comes the word, the ineffable word. And from the word comes everything else. So here we are with the creative power of sound, and we can see how it has created the universe and how it is all-pervading. But what is that to you and me? How can we use sound to affect the issues in our life? What is the power of this sound, and how does it work? Well, the one I'm familiar with, among several ways, is Sanskrit mantra. Now, Sanskrit is an ancient tongue. We can trace it back 7,000 to 8,000 years, and then we lose track of it in the mists of time. It was widely used before the advent of writing, so it is part of an oral tradition, and it is the language of the chakras. And as we'll get into a little bit later in this course, it is an energy-based language. Its very essence is to work with the building blocks of creation through sound that are reproduced in you and me. The way we work with this Sanskrit language, this language of the chakras, is through Sanskrit mantras. Now, mantras are spiritual formulas. They are sounds put together in a particular way, one might say even a scientific way, to produce specific kinds of results. And so powerful are these sound formulas called mantras that they were hidden for many thousands of years. They were hidden and taught only within the Brahmin priesthood. And then later they started to leak out from the priesthood into the outside secular world. And this was, spiritually speaking, not a good thing. And as we'll talk about later, one of the tasks of the Buddha was to stop this movement, which he did brilliantly. But even with this interesting background, understanding that Sanskrit mantras are tools for power and tools of power, the tools of the spoken word, language of the chakras that you and I can use, how can we use them? What will they do for us? Well, all of us have had job issues from time to time. Sanskrit mantras can help you with whatever problems you may have in your job, or its cousin, income. We all from time to time have had little bumps in our relationship. We'd like to be able to make it better, to optimize our relationship. Maybe it's something in the other person. Maybe it's something in us. Maybe we don't know. There are Sanskrit mantras that will help you with this. Health issues are something we all have. There are formulas that you can use that will help you promote health in ways that are frankly astonishing. And later in this course, I'll tell you some stories of people who used mantras for specific problems and the results they had, sometimes dramatic results. Another thing that I call karmic speed bumps as we go through the parking lot of life, the things that come out of nowhere, that present themselves, and you go, what am I going to do about this? There are mantras for those kinds of situations as well. Ultimately, the purpose of Sanskrit mantra is spiritual. We can use it to solve worldly problems. We can use it for health issues. But what they are really about are spiritual evolution. We hear about meditation. It's part of the common lexicon these days. And one form of meditation, and among many forms, is mantra meditation. And that is the primary kind of meditation that we'll be talking about in this course. How you can take specific Sanskrit formulas and move yourself along spiritually, evolve towards a goal which is called mukti or liberation, where you will no longer have to return to this earthly school. So while we'll be presenting mantras for you that will help you in the problems that you encounter, we also want you to know that the final objective is really spiritual. In the Divine Comedy by Dante, as Dante the Pilgrim ascends through the various levels of hell, he encounters all of the human negative issues, greed, lust, avarice, gluttony, those kinds of things. And Sanskrit mantras are designed to almost effortlessly eliminate those kinds of qualities as we progress spiritually. The I Ching has a wonderful statement. It says the best way to combat evil is to make energetic progress towards the good. And Sanskrit mantras help you make energetic progress towards the good. And so if we can serve your interests in that regard during this course, we will have achieved our objective. I'm often asked, how did you get involved with all of this stuff? Did you just decide one day that you were going to become a teacher of Sanskrit mantra? The answer is certainly not. I whimsically say that I was drafted. Here I am, living a normal, ordinary, everyday life. I've been an army captain. I've got a master's degree. I'm a business consultant. I'm working as a television producer. And I'm working on a business project one day in my living room. A friend of mine and I were making a proposal to Muhammad Ali for a television project. When all of a sudden, on the notepad in front of me, there appeared a perfect circle of bright white light. And in it was a brief message that was personal in nature, and I won't go into it here. But it was startling in my everyday world. But it wasn't finished. I then began to rise out of my body with one part. And I saw the universe, my small living room portion of the universe, split in two, complete duplicates, as one started to leave and one stayed there. A third part of me began to descend into an opening that had suddenly appeared in my chest, and I was descending into my own heart. I knew, beyond doubt, I was going to die. Now, I can tell you that this gets your attention right away. I was panic-stricken. And who wants to die? Well, the experience lasted another 60 seconds or so, which I tell you is a very long time. I finally managed to bring myself around to a normal state, and within 30 seconds was on the phone to various religious organizations of my childhood in Western spirituality. None of them had any answers and frankly couldn't wait to get me off the phone. Here's some other nutcase calling. Finally, I called an Eastern-based organization, and they suggested that I call the only holy man they knew at the time on the East Coast, and that was in Philadelphia. I was in Washington, D.C., so I called Philadelphia, and I spoke to a wonderful man by the name of Vijayendra Pratap, who was teaching Hatha Yoga there. And he very kindly gave me some breathing exercises, suggested I read the Upanishads, and when I told him what was happening to me, he laughed uproariously. Now, this was the kind of laugh that your best friend would break out with if you told him some fool stunt you'd pulled and the trouble it got you into. It was a warm laugh. It was an intimate laugh. And so the part of me that was deeply concerned about life and death began to relax. Well, I followed his suggestions and began to read the Upanishads and other things voraciously, seeking answers. And I came across a scripture called the Katha Upanishad. The Katha Upanishad is a conversation between a young spiritual protege, Nichiketas, and Yama, the god of death. And in that conversation, Yama begins to explain the mysteries of the cave of the heart. When I came across that passage, my eyes stopped dead on the page. Time slowed down, and I read every word, not wanting to miss one single nuance. And there in front of me, my most profound and terrifying experience unfolded in a scripture written over 8,000 years ago. And I knew there's nothing new. Everything is known by someone, somewhere. I just realized I didn't know anything at all about anything that really mattered. And so there I began. That was in 1970. I've been halfway around the world, met many spiritual teachers, famous and anonymous. There was, of course, one teacher that I spent about 11 years with. And after I'd been with him a couple of years, and he could see that I had both interest and facility in Sanskrit mantras, he said, "Very good. Your job will be to spread the ancient teachings in the West. And so my intention is to share some of the things that I've learned over the years with you, so so that you can solve the problems that confront you in daily life and use them just as I do. The question arises, where do Sanskrit mantras come from? Where did we get these spiritual formulas to solve problems? What's the genesis? The truth is, no one knows for sure. There certainly weren't any written records. The oral tradition went on for many thousands of years before the advent of writing. So I'm asking you to picture a scene in the foothills of the Himalayas in the Indus River Valley, many thousands of years ago. You have a primarily agrarian economy. There's pottery, there's music, there is some painting, there is not writing. But there is a level of sophistication. One day, one or two from among their number has an irresistible impulse and leaves the village and trods up the slowly rising foothills and finds a comfortable place under a tree and sits in meditation spontaneously and after some time begins to chant loudly. It echoes through the foothills and in the village below, some people hear and go to investigate. Now, because the oral tradition is used, it's much easier for people to remember what they hear. It's part of their culture. So as they sit there, listening to this person chanting these things, they remember. So they can then go down the hill and report. Well, Joe was up here sitting under a tree, and he started talking about this great being that's divine, and we're all part of it. And we can understand how it works and how we're part of it. And when I left, he was on the 27th way to achieve that, using the language that we use in a different way called Sanskrit. That was the beginning of the oral records of these scriptures. Regularly, people would go up into the foothills, and this much we do know, that people would follow them up and sit and memorize as people would spontaneously go into meditation and begin to chant what we know today as the world's oldest scripture. With the advent of writing, people began to write down what they heard on palm leaves. In fact, whole families became librarians, and it was everyone's task to record them. And when the leaves would start to rot from fungi or become brittle, they would recopy them onto new leaves. And whole houses were devoted to storing the leaves. Well, after several hundred years, as you can imagine, they ran out of room. So they decided to summarize, and a whole wall became a couple of shelves. And then they had plenty of room again. And this went on for several hundred more years. And what we have today are scriptures called the Brahmanas and the Aryankas and the Upanishads, which are summaries of the summaries of the summaries of those ancient scriptures. The only ones which are not summarized are what we know today as the Vedas, the four Vedas. And we had another series of documents that are a wealth of information called the Puranas. The Puranas are a series of stories and myths that contain mantras and how to use them in solving some of the problems of life. So in this course, we'll be drawing mantras from the Vedas, the Upanishads, and the Puranas. And that is how, as we loosely understand it, Sanskrit mantras came to us those many thousands of years ago. What about those people that went up the mountain, that answered that inner call, that sat and closed their eyes in meditation? Today, we would call them rishis, or sages, or seers. A seer is one who really sees the mantra and how it works. And from those early ones, we have whole classes of spiritual adepts, each with a different kind of name. We have the Brahma Rishi, the Maha Rishi, the Raja Rishi, the Deva Rishi, and various kinds of saints. We have Gandharvas, the celestial musicians. But those first ones were the spiritual geniuses of their time, the proteges, the prototypes of all that we know today about Sanskrit mantra. They were the first sages many thousands of years ago. These spiritual geniuses, one of the first things they chanted was something called the Purusha Suktam. the hymn to the transcendental over-self, that great being from which we have all come, that great being of which we are all a part. It is the fire, and we are the flames. And that hymn to that being says, the transcendental person has 1,000 heads, 1,000 faces, 1,000 arms. Those heads and faces and arms are you and me. And then it goes on to talk about the world at large and how this transcendental person also created the birds that fly and the streams that flow, and taught about how the different varieties of humanity have sprung from parts of the transcendental Purusha, how the kings come from one form, and the warriors come from another, and those who work in the fields come from another part, but that it's all a unified whole working together. So profoundly were these ancient seers touched that when they came out of meditation, they said, how can we represent such a truth? How can we propitiate such a being? And so they decided to create ceremonies which can express that which is sometimes inexpressible. They gathered flowers and arranged them. They took the spring rains and they made an oblation representing the spirit of that being over rocks and various artifacts that they would gather. And thus the world's first religious ceremonies as we know them came to being. Even the modern forms of the Catholic Mass are drawn from those ancient ceremonies with their incense and flowers and chants for this purpose and that purpose. To give you a taste, a flavor of what those ancient ceremonies were like and are like today, because some of them have been done exactly the same way for thousands and thousands of years. I'd like to chant for you the Purusha Suktam, which is that hymn to that great being, that great fire. And you may use it as a meditation. It will be 3 to 3.5 minutes long. It's advisable to sit quietly, comfortably, with the spine erect, the trunk straight and steady, the head sitting comfortably on the top of the spine without tension. If you have a tight belt or tight shoes, you can take them off. If you're driving in your car, be aware that this chant produces a lot of energy. So take care to keep your energy focused on the road. If you feel like it's getting the better of you, pull off, pull into a driveway and listen and then go on your way. You may feel the energy moving very strongly in the spine, where the major chakras reside. And this will work directly on your chakras.
Hari Om Sahasra Shirshah Purushah Sahasrakshah Sahasrapat Sabhumin Vishvato Vritva Atitistata Shangalam Om Purushai Vedam Sarvam Yadbutam Yajjabhavyam Utham Ratatvas Yeshanaha Yatanena De Rohati Om Yeta Vanasya Mahimat Ato Jayamscha Purushah Padosya Vishwabhutani Traparasyam Ratam Didi Om Tripad Vritva Udait Purushah Padosya Ha Bhavat Punah Tato Vishwang Yekramat Sashanana Shanayavi Om Tasmat Virara Jayata Brajo Adi Purushah Sachato Achirichata Pashad Bhumimato Parah Om Yat Purushe Nahavisha Deva Yadma Matanvata Vasanto Asya Sita Jam Grishma Idma Sharadavihi Om Tam Yadnam Varishi Prakshan Purusham Jatamagata Tena Deva Ayajanta Sadhyar Sayasthiye Om Tasma Dhadnat Sarvabhutaha Sambatam Prasharajam Pashom Stam Chakre Vayavyan Aranyan Gramyaschiye Om Tasma Dhadnat Sarvabhutaha Richaha Samani Jatnari Chamdam Si Jatnari Tasma Jajusasvara Jayata Om Tasma Dashwa Jayanta Yeke Cho Bayarataha gavo hajidnari tasma tasma jata ajavyaha om yat purusham yadarahu katidaha vyakalpayonna mukham kimasya kao bahuka urupada ujete om brahmanusya mukhamasi bahu rajanyaha kitaha urutatyayadvaishaha padyam sutra ajayata om chandrama manaso tataha chakshoho suryo ajayataha Mukadindrashchagnishya pranadvaya rajayata Om nabhya asidantariksham shushnyaudya samavattata Padhyam bumirishashutrava tatallakannakalpayam Om saptasya sanpuridayaha Prasapta vidakitaha Devayadyadnam tanvanhaha padnam purusham pasham Om yadnenu yadnamayajanta deva Sani dharmani pradamanyasan Dehana kammahimanaha Sachanta yatra purvehi sadyaha santirivaha Purusha suktam japadhyanam samarpayami
So now you've had a taste of how the Sanskrit language sounds and how it sounded those many thousands of years ago from those seers sitting under the trees with their eyes closed. We're pronouncing the mantras in the same way and the hymns in the same way. You could probably feel the power of it. It is working directly on your chakras. Over the years, I've had people say to me, well, can't I say the same kinds of things in English and have the same kinds of effects? Well, there are things called affirmations that we say in English, but affirmations are quite different than Sanskrit mantras. Affirmations work more on the subconscious mind in the sense of beginning to program and condition those parts of ourselves that may need positive reinforcement. But Sanskrit is about energy. It works directly on the chakras. And it is an energy-based language rather than a meaning-based language. So the experience of working with Sanskrit mantra will be dislodging things that are stored in your legs, in your arms, various thoughts and emotions that may be stored throughout the body. And by the action of the Sanskrit will actually dislodge them and remove them. They will be pulled back into the spine and ejected just as surely as a jet plane pilot can eject himself from his plane by pushing a button, Sanskrit mantra is a button we can use to eject streams of negativity that we no longer wish to carry about. The two languages that are energy-based rather than meaning-based, in my experience, are Sanskrit and Hebrew. The Kabbalah is also a powerful, codified system of working with energy through sound. Having acknowledged that, I can't talk much about it. It's not my area of expertise. But Sanskrit, I can talk about. The power of mantra will be expressed exclusively in Sanskrit, and there will be words for which there is no English translation, because the Sanskrit word is about energy and not about meaning. The best place to start for that is seed mantras, because seed mantras have no translation at all into English. They are short, usually one, sometimes two-syllabled words, that are about certain kinds of energy. And we're going to go through some of the seed mantras, which are then used to build longer mantras. Before we get into seed sounds, I would be remiss if I didn't explain what mantra means insofar as it's translatable. Manas is the Sanskrit word for mind, and many scholars say that the tra part comes from the word tri, which means to free from. So at its essence, mantra is a tool used by the mind to free one from the mind. When you say a mantra, you begin a vibration that begins to permeate the body and permeate the cells. And as we know, all kinds of thoughts are constantly riding in and through our mind, our psycho-spiritual mechanism. And the power of the mantra begins to absorb all of those until it becomes the one great wave of vibration. So the way mantras work is to help you arrive at a state of tranquility where your mind is silent from all of the subconscious waves of thoughts and ideas that are sweeping through it all the time. And when the mind is quiet, it can really concentrate and it can really think. So the mind then can achieve a state that we call concentration, where you can think on one thing without wandering. Have you ever sat and tried to just think about one thing? You'll sit there and then you'll think, let's see, what am I going to have for dinner later? Or, boy, that was a great movie we saw. Oh, yes, I'm thinking about X. I'm thinking about Y. And, oh, my, I got to scratch my leg over here. The mind does not stay one-pointed. If you sit and observe your own mind, it's all over the place. Well, mantra can help bring the mind to a state of one-pointedness. The basic building blocks of mantras are seed sounds. And just as the name implies, it contains within it the seed or the germ of a particular kind of power. Just as we know that an entire oak tree is contained within an acorn, in principle, ready to sprout and grow. Similarly, seed sounds contain an entire principle ready to sprout and grow within as we say the mantra. So that's why we call them seed sounds. And by saying them, we tend them, we water them, we give them sunlight, and those principles grow within us. All right, what are they? Let's take the first one as abundance. Now, abundance means many things to many different kinds of people. We tend to think of it as prosperity. We want more means to support our family, to live the kind of lifestyle we want. So we think that abundance is prosperity. But in fact, abundance can mean many different kinds of things. In an agrarian economy, abundance was having a large enough family to be able to tend the crops. If you are a person living alone, abundance is having friends and acquaintance. It can be enough food to eat. So the seed sound for abundance includes all of these kinds of abundance. I'll chant it for you three times. Shreem. 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 Simple, isn't it? Shreem. Each one of these seed sounds has become associated with an anthropomorphized principle. We've all heard of the Hindu pantheon, the gods and goddesses. And there are two schools of thought on the gods and goddesses. One of them is, well, these are symbols that can be used for our mind to focus on various principles. And that is probably true. There's another school that says, these beings once existed, became liberated, and decided to stick around here and help us. And now we know them through their seed sounds. Well, this can sound outrageous, except we think about the Catholic saints and the Greek gods and goddesses and the ancestors who've gone before. And we find that many cultures throughout history have this tradition of those who are on another plane that were once here that are helping us. So I wouldn't dismiss it quite so quickly that these are only anthropomorphized principles. Ultimately, it doesn't matter whether they once existed or whether they are anthropomorphized principles, because they work. So for the seed sound that I gave you, shreem, the anthropomorphized principle is a beautiful feminine figure called Lakshmi. She's shown standing on a flower pad, her outstretched hands, there's money coming out of it, and there are elephants in the background with upraised trunks, which, as you probably know, are a symbol of good luck in the Far East. Beautiful woman, Lakshmi, Shreem. Now, if you want to experiment, you can start just saying to yourself out loud or even silently, Shreem, 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 Shreem. I once experimented. I went to bed one night and decided I was going to say Shreem as much as I could between the time I went to bed and the time I got up the next morning. Now, naturally, you fall off to sleep saying Shreem. The next morning, I went down to breakfast, and I said hello, and the person that was sitting at the breakfast table said, your voice, it sounds completely different. What have you been doing? And I knew that the power of the Shreem mantra had already begun to change the tenor of my voice, and I'd said it maybe, 5,000, 10,000 times. But that was my feedback from the universe, as it were, that already the Shreem mantra was beginning to work. Now, as you will see, these are also building blocks. There are mantras later on that will contain the word Shreem in it. So you can start saying the seed, and then later you can say a longer mantra that contains the seed. So here are some other seeds. I'm. This is a seed sound that rules artistic, scientific, and educational endeavors. The anthropomorphized principle there is Saraswati, Saraswati. And this is the seed sound that governs development and manifestation of spiritual knowledge, also good education, memory, intelligence, musical skills. And it is the name of this feminine principle that many highly developed sages in India have taken as part of their own name. Dayananda Saraswati, Brahmananda Saraswati, where they put the name of this feminine principle as part of their own spiritual name, which shows you in what high regard they hold this energy and the seed sound. So, if you want to improve your own education, your own musical skills, you may chant the mantra, I'm. In fact, in parts of India, women chant it for their children so that they'll do well in school. They'll chant I'm, or the longer Saraswati mantra that we'll talk about a bit later. The next seed sound is kleem. Kleem. And it is the principle of attraction. Isn't that interesting? It attracts things. It's like a little spiritual energy magnet. And it can attract almost anything, which is why it is often used in combination with other seed sounds to improve or enhance the qualities that they represent. Now, I'm going to chant a longer Lakshmi mantra that uses the seed sound that we talked about, Shreem, and this one, Kleem, the principle of attraction, and the name of the anthropomorphized principle, which is Lakshmi, principle of abundance, and Namaha, which means I salute. So the literal translation of what I'm going to say would be seed sound Om, which we'll talk about, seed sound Shreem for abundance, seed sound Kleem for attraction, salutations to the principle of abundance. It sounds like this. Om Shreem Kleem Lakshmiye Namaha. Om Shreem Kleem Lakshmiye Namaha. Om Shreem Kleem Lakshmiye Namaha. And if you are after abundance, this is a wonderful mantra for you to use. And you can just start saying it. And say it when you get up in the morning. Say it while you're taking your shower. Say it while you're driving your car. Om Shreem Kleem Lakshmiye Namaha. Om Shrim Klim Lakshmiyei Namaha. Klim is also used to attract other principles. The great feminine principle Kali, for instance, that we'll talk about a little later, a mantra is Om Klim Kalikayei Namaha. Om Klim Kalikayei Namaha. And there it's attracting the Kali principle. In another context, Om Klim Krishnaya Namaha. Om Klim Krishnaya Namaha. There it's used to attract that being, that avatar of Vishnu that was known as Krishna. So you see the seed sound Klim as the principle of attraction has a wide variety of applications. If you want to use the principle of attraction by itself, the best way to do it is to concentrate on that which is desired. So you couple it with mental intention so that you give something for the Klim to hang on to, as it were. So you're employing the seed sound through the power of sound Klim, and you're using it as an attachment to an object in your mind. You can sit, for instance, and gaze at a candle and think about that which you desire and go Klim, Klim. Of course, there's an old saying in the Far East, be careful what you ask for. You just might get it.
Mantra, Sacred Words of Power, Session 2, Seed Mantras.
There are some people who dearly want protection from some of the negative aspects of life or negative people that we all encounter in life, and there's a seed sound for this as well. The seed sound is doom, just like the gates of doom. I would say it doom, doom, doom. And again, the principle is feminine in nature, and she is called Durga, Durga. She's pictured riding a tiger or a lion with 100 arms, each with a weapon of destruction, a sword, a pike, a club, an arrow, so forth, with this beautifully radiant face. And to the seekers after truth, she is radiantly beautiful. And in your meditation, if you happen to see her, the tiger may come up and lick you on the face. But to those who would seek to harm seekers after truth, they see only the weapons, and she appears terrible. Her seed sound is dum, 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 dum. Durga invokes protection for that which is feared. Dum. A full mantra using dum for protection is Om Dum Durgayei Namaha. Om Dum Durgayei Namaha. Om Dum Durgayei Namaha. If Dum is the seed, Durga is the full manifestation of the power of the seed. So you can say Dum quietly and concentrate on protection from X or Y. But if you want to invoke more power, use the whole mantra. Om Dum Durgayei Namaha. Om Dum Durgayei Namaha. The most terrifying aspect of the feminine that exists in the Far Eastern pantheon is Kali. Oh, she's shown with a garland of skulls and tongues sticking out and, oh, this terrible visage. But really, it is destruction of negative ego. All of us have places within that want to resist all kinds of good things. They seem to be stubborn. Who knows where it comes from, but we all have these little pockets. And a good way to go after those is by invoking Kali. Her seed mantra is Cream. cream, cream. So if you wanted to say, oh, Kali, come and destroy my negative parts so that I am purity itself, Om Kreem Kali Kaye Namaha. Om Kreem Kali Kaye Namaha. Om Kreem Kali Kaye Namaha. You'll notice that this one is Om Kreem Kali Kaye Namaha. And earlier I talked about Om Kleem Kali Kaye Namaha. Let me make that distinction clear. Kleem is the principle of attraction. You're attracting Kali. Kreem is the principle of invocation. You're saying, Kali, do your stuff within. Of the two, Kreem is more dramatic, more instantaneously powerful. It can begin to work so powerfully that you find that you become a little agitated, or maybe your irritability grows. The Maharishi Mahesh Yogi made a wonderful statement. He said the mind cannot conceive of stress and negativity leaving for no reason at all, because things don't happen for no reason at all, according to the mind. Therefore, as junk, garbage is leaving, the mind, if it does not see a reason, will invent one. So what this means in ordinary life is you can be saying, Om Kreem Kali Kaye Namaha. And then something that you take normally that would not bother you, all of a sudden makes you feel very irritable or irritated. That's just stuff leaving and your mind attaching it to something. Now, this may happen with the Om Kreem Kali Kaye Namaha mantra. And if it does, I advise you to either switch to the Om Kleem Kali Kaye Namaha or give it a rest for a while and take it up later. Because this is a very sharp-pointed pneumatic air drill that you're taking to your own negativity. Of all of the anthropomorphized principles, Ganesha is probably the most popular, certainly among the kids. This is the elephant-headed god, a large belly, huge ears that fan, and a long trunk. And his seed sound is gum, just like chewing gum. Gum, gum, gum. And the aspect of Ganesha for which gum is the seed, is for removing obstacles. Now, this is very handy because it's nonspecific. It can be an inner obstacle or an outer obstacle. It can be a condition as an obstacle. If you want to remove any obstacles to your success or achievement in any endeavor, gum is the seed, Ganapati is the principle, and the short, powerful mantra is, Om Gam Ganapataye Namaha. Om Gam Ganapataye Namaha. Om Gam Ganapataye Namaha. Ganesha and Ganapati are two different names for the same principle. Gana means group in one context and power in another. As Ganesha, Esha means ruler. So it is ruler of power, Gana, Esha, or ruler of the group, Gana, Esha. As Ganapati, Pati means spouse of. So it is either the spouse of power or the spouse of the group. Why is this important? Inside, we have a movable center. We are not really one person. We like to think we're one person, but we're one person with many parts. Let me give you an example. If you've ever known anyone that was smoking who wanted to quit smoking, you can immediately identify, I want to quit smoking. And then there's another part that says, but I want a cigarette. Now, which is who? Which is the person? In point of fact, they both are. And because there is no inner unity, there is a problem. There are multiple desire centers within. And what Ganesha does as the ruler of the group is unify these and provide inner unity. Gana, Esha, Gana, Pati. So by achieving a state of unity, we can do anything. So Ganesha begins to unify the disparate portions of consciousness and desires that subsist within, so that we can literally do what we want to do. So with that as a background, let me give you examples of where the Ganesha mantra was used. 17 years ago, a friend of mine was leaving a career as an Army non-commissioned officer and had taken all the courses to become a gemologist and had looked around to find a job and could not. And so he approached me and asked me what can he do to eliminate any obstacles between he and the proper job. So I said, all right, for the next 5 days, I want you to do Om Gam Gana Pataye Namaha as much as you can, from the time you awake in the morning to the time you go to sleep at night. Whenever you can bring your mind to it, chant Om Gam Gana Pataye Namaha. And he was very faithful. At the end of that time, we did a Ganesha ceremony, a puja. We talked about those ancient ceremonies that were done by those original spiritual geniuses. Well, I do a fair number of those ceremonies, and it was my joy to do one for him. After he had planted the seed and worked to achieve the fruit by his efforts, within 3 days, he had 5 offers of jobs as a gemologist. So we nodded to each other that once again, the efficacy and the power of mantra had been demonstrated to us. I had my own example in 1984. I moved to California, and through a series of odd incidences, I didn't have a job. And so I was reduced to temping, going to temporary agencies, which I was grateful for. But I thought, you know, I had better do something that I know from my own tool bag. So I began to use the mantra, Om Gam Gana Pataye Namaha. Now, I'm a fellow who dives into the pool with his clothes on. So I did this mantra constantly. I did it standing, sitting, eating, vacuuming, shopping for groceries, driving the car, getting up, going to bed, brushing my teeth. Constantly the mantra was going on. I went to a movie. All through the movie, Om Gam Gana Pataye Namaha is going on. I would sometimes wake up in the middle of the night and hear it going on inside. And if it wasn't, I would start, Om Gam Gana Pataye Namaha. About 2 weeks into my discipline of chanting the Ganesha mantra, the Ganapati mantra, I was called upon to do a ceremony down in Orange County, California, south of Los Angeles. I went there, did the ceremony. There were about 30 people, and afterwards, you're socializing. We had some food. And the inevitable question comes up, well, what do you do in the other part of your life? What do you do for a living? And so I revealed that I was between things. And the person said, really, what field do you have? And I had done management and marketing consulting. And so the woman said, well, our company needs a marketing consultant. Why don't you come and talk to us? And I said, well, what kind of industry are you in? She says, well, it's healthcare. And I said, I don't know anything about healthcare. Well, come and talk to us anyway. Well, I did. I interviewed a fellow who interviewed me for 10 minutes and said, well, you'll do fine. And I said, fine at what? And he said, well, we need someone to go out and make calls on businesses and get some information to them and then give them some information so that they will send us people who are sick or injured. So I said, street marketing, that's what it is. And I said, fine. So I accepted the position. It was a temporary position to last for 3 months. I thought, this beats waiting by the phone from the temporary agency, why not? So I went out into the street, but the materials I had been given to work with were, frankly, just terrible. plain manila file folders, Xeroxed materials inside. From my previous experience, I felt like this was amateur hour. So after the second day, in the evening, I outlined what I thought their materials should look like, a printed file folder, their brochure I redid, laid it out, and other materials as well. And the next morning, I brought it in and I showed it to one of the doctors who was one of the owners. He looked at me and went completely quiet for a moment and said, "Meet me upstairs in the conference room in 15 minutes. I went up 15 minutes later, and there were the three doctors who were owners of the facilities, and the one that had spoken to me said, "Okay, give us your presentation." I did, on the spot. And he said, "Fine, leave the room for 5 minutes." I did. They called me back in and said, "You're the new marketing director. Get your cards printed up and get this stuff printed as quickly as you can." Meanwhile, I'm still doing Om Gam Gana Pataye Namaha. And I'm not even halfway through the discipline yet. I'm doing it for 40 days. We'll talk about the 40-day discipline later. You find 40 days in many of the religions, whether it's Christ in the wilderness or Noah tossing on the seas. You find 40 days. And it's in the East also. So I'm chanting my mantra, Om Gam Ganapataye Namaha, and I have to put on a conference with a hospital for a group of businesses, and I'm working with their marketing director. She and I get along. She asks me, "How much are they paying you, if you don't mind my asking?" And I tell her, and it's not a great deal. She said, "They're getting you cheap." At the conclusion of the conference, the doctor comes up to congratulate us on a job well done, and to my astonishment, she says, "You know, you're not paying this guy what he's worth, and if you're not careful, someone's going to hire him right away from you, make him an offer he can't refuse." He was very smooth, and he said, "Oh, we know it. We're going to take good care of him." And within 2 weeks, I had a 40% raise. I kept this position for 7 years. After 5 years, I turned them into a client as my consulting business grew, was well appreciated for my work. By saying this mantra, Om Gam Gana Pataye Damaha, I had removed obstacles between me and whatever was the appropriate employment for me. Now observe that I didn't just wait for a miracle to happen. When someone presented me with an opportunity, I followed it up. Because we never know how the mantra may work. It may present one thing to us and then another. So it doesn't mean that you should sit inside waiting for the phone to ring and your job to come. That's not what I did. But also be engaged in all of the other normal things one might do in looking for a job, as I did. The other thing that I want to say is that you can just say gum. You can sit quietly and concentrate. Gum, 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 gum. And work to remove whatever obstacles may exist, whether they're external, whether they're in somewhere in a belief system that you have, whether it's something buried in the subconscious mind, gum, 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 will ferret it out and release it. The next seed sound is for the principle of consciousness known as Shiva. Shiva literally is the consciousness of the universe, and we'll talk a great deal about that later in the many aspects of Shiva. But for now, know that the seed sound is And if you say that, you can feel the vibration throughout your whole body and moving up into your head. So that you begin to align the consciousness more and more into the upper regions of the head where expanded consciousness can manifest. The next seed sound is Hreem. 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 This is a seed sound which allows one to see through the illusion of this reality. You'll find it in both Vedic and Tibetan Buddhist practices. In Hinduism, it is the seed sound for two aspects, one masculine and one feminine. In the feminine, it's called Mahamaya, Mahamaya, or the great illusion. And they say if you meditate just on the seed sound, hrim, 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 for a long time, you will see this reality, quote, as it is, closed quote, whatever that is. And apparently only the experience of itself can define it. Hrim is the seed sound for what we might call the sacred heart in Vedic Hinduism, a small eight-petal lotus located just below our heart and 10 inches above the solar plexus. There, they say, a flame burns, but it is a flame that is not of this world, a flame from the transcendental Purusha, that great being of which we are a part, and beyond. I say beyond because, like a swan swimming upon the water, the swan does not get wet, and the flame is not altered by being in this world. Like the swan, it swims in this world, but it is not of this world. Now, this creates a great problem, because as part of the principle that it created this entire universe, we can also manifest and create. What does this mean? Imagine a room in a large house. And in one room, some people reverently get together. They have a blue light bulb. They pray, they meditate, they chant. They screw the bulb in, and it lights up, and it's blue. And they know beyond doubt God is absolutely blue. Of course, in another room, there are a group of people that have a green light bulb. They also pray and meditate and chant. And with great sincerity, they also screw the light bulb in by their practices, and it lights up, and they know beyond doubt God is green. In yet another room, there's a group with a red bulb, and another room, people with a yellow bulb, and so forth. Eventually, they're going to meet in the hall. And when they do, there's going to be a terrible ruckus, because each of them have an absolute corner on the truth of things. They know that God is red, blue, yellow, green, whatever it is. They may be ready to create religious warfare, as it were, pluck out each other's eyes, peel each other's skin, not unlike the great religious wars that we have seen throughout history. And according to the Vedic teachings, they have committed the error of confusing the current with the bulb. That God is the current that animates all of the bulbs of all of the religions. And the animator within us is that flame within. That flame that burns in the sacred heart. That can literally give us whatever we want, put us in contact with our divinity. And so it is at once a source of great inspiration and knowledge, and a source of great confusion if we don't have understanding concerning its true nature. And so Hrim is the seed sound for that flame in the sacred heart. Tibetan Buddhists will show you a meditation where Hri, the same word without the M, is meditated upon, and you will eventually see a figure holding a sword, and it will be Manjushri, God of wisdom and discerning knowledge, discriminating intelligence. Whereas in Hinduism, you might see a being called Narayana, or a beautiful woman called Mahamaya, all from the same seed. And so understand that whatever is your approach to divinity, Hrim can make it manifest for you. The only caveat is, don't confuse the current with the bulb. Because of its spiritual potency, Hrim is often included in longer mantras as a method of gaining access to higher dimensions of truth. For instance, Hrim Shrim Klim Parameshwari Swaha, or Hrim Shrim Klim Mahalakshmiye Swaha, where not only do you want to attract the principle, not only do you want to unwrap the fruit of the principle, but you want to see it in the highest context beyond an apparent level of reality. And so the hreem prefix as a seed sound exists in many, many mantras, where worldly goals are also attached to spiritual ones. Therefore, it is unusual to use the mantra hreem simply by itself. But in the Sanskrit mantra construction, hreem is an important building block because it ties the manifestation of the principle to the creative flame in the Sacred Heart. There's another set of seed sounds that have to do with chakras. Now, later we're going to talk a great deal about chakras, but for now, know that they are energy processing centers in something called a subtle body that interpenetrates the physical body. And these centers roughly correspond to the major nerve ganglia that are located along the back of the spine. The chakras present the map of sounds from which the Sanskrit alphabet itself is fashioned. And we'll talk about this, as I said, in more detail later. But for now, know that the six chakras located along the spine and the seventh at the top of the head represent the map of our spiritual development and, as such, contain great power which we can unleash and harness as we grow spiritually. So let's go over the seed sounds of the chakras, and we will relate them to other mantras later in our study of mantras. Beginning at the base of the spine, the root chakra, lum, lum, lum. And you meditate on this sound, silently or out loud, for some time, and you may find that a mystic fragrance, some have likened it to the smell of roses, seems to accompany you wherever you go. Moving up to the genital center, vum, vum, vum. Here is the seat of many of our appetites, sexual and otherwise. You may find that your patience increases as you meditate upon this syllable, or that you have greater control of your appetite. Those of you who struggle from time to time with diet and weight may get some relief by meditating on vum, vum, vum. Moving up to the center of the body, called the solar plexus, rum, rum, rum. This is a large chakra and contains a lot of healing energy. And you can sometimes balance stomach ailments or digestive problems if you meditate for a prolonged period of time on this syllable. Rum, rum. Moving up to the heart center. Yum, yum, yum. Now, it is written in some of the scriptures that you may hear music or divine voices when this chakra opens. It becomes an opening into some of the higher, subtler realms, they say. And I would go back to the Bible where it says, if you hear spirits, test them. In the physical plane, diseases such as asthma, some lung disorders, can be alleviated by meditating upon yum, yum, yum. And at the throat, we have the fifth chakra, and the seed sound for that is hum, hum, hum. Now some, notably the Tibetans, will also pronounce this hum, hum, hum. Now, I've used it both ways, and I can report to you that it seems to work for me, at least, either way I pronounce it, and I have mantras that pronounce it one way or the other. Illnesses of the throat can be positively affected, and some people have reported that languages become easier to learn by meditating upon hum, hum, hum. And now we move up to the forehead, the chakra located between the eyes, the sixth chakra, whose seed syllable is known to most of us, Om, Om, Om. This seed sound is a prefix to most of the mantras that you will learn in this course or that you may encounter from other sources. Most of them will begin with Om. There's a joke saying that comes from the East that whereas in Roman times all roads led to Rome, in a spiritual sense, all roads lead to Om. For the first five chakras, notice that we have a similar kind of rhythm. Lum, vam, ram, yum, hum. And then it moves to Om. At the sixth chakra, the pairs of opposites disappear. One exists as part of a unified whole of this universe. Such things as pain and pleasure, masculine, feminine, good and evil, are reported to disappear, and the universe becomes coherent to your understanding, and you see that all of it fits together into organic whole. Paramahamsa Yogananda, who founded the Self-Realization Fellowship, reported that some people had 360-degree vision when they reached this place. And so the unified world of nature appeared to them all around their head, and they could see it everywhere. There is another chakra called the Sahasrara chakra, located at the top of the head. If one is aware of one's individual consciousness as a unified whole at number six, one pours the cup of one's consciousness into the ocean at the seventh. At this point, your consciousness enters the ocean of consciousness. And for a time, you may be at one, but not even aware of your separate existence. And then when you come out of this meditation, then once again you are aware, oh yes, I have a body. I exist as a separate individual. But at that point, you have poured your cup into the ocean of consciousness, and then when you come out, you dip it back in again. And they say that those who have experienced that are never the same when they come back into normal waking consciousness as before. At this point, we have moved beyond the principle of sound entirely. We are into a realm of consciousness that is beyond sound and into a realm called simply the mind. We'll discuss this a bit later when we take up the ancient debate between sound and mind as to which is greater. But know for now that when you move into the seventh chakra, you have left the entire phenomenological world behind and are in a realm that is beyond even the creative principle of sound. And that's why there is no seed sound for the seventh chakra. We've presented two different sets of seed sounds. One relate to principles which don't have any specific physical location within, but they are principles that can sprout and grow within as you say them. The other set of seed mantras had to do with the chakras and expanding the potential that may exist there. One of these seed sounds, or more than one, may somehow appeal to you in some way that's difficult to describe. If so, I would suggest beginning to meditate upon it. It can be Om, 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 or it could be the principle of abundance. Shreem, shreem, shreem. Later we'll build longer mantras that you can say using these seed sounds, but you can start right now unwrapping the power of the principles within by meditating upon the seed sound of your choice. Shreem, Om, Aim, Kleem. These seed sounds that we have just talked about are the building blocks of mantras that were chanted by those ancient rishis that went up out of the village onto the hill those many thousands of years ago and brought forth the mystical Sanskrit language. And among the many mantras they presented us are these small but powerful seed sounds that can unwrap within us tangible, usable power to solve problems in our daily life and to grow spiritually, so that we realize within us that great principle of sound which has created this entire cosmos and even created the state of enlightenment to which we all aspire.